Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. All right, welcome back, everybody. We're here with John from GuideSpark, Senior Director of Enterprise Sales. We're going to start today by talking about John's quota for the year. No pressure,
and,
John.
And boom. Like.
So can you tell us a little bit about your quota? How are you guys gold?
Yeah, so our what we call our new business or new logo team, we shoulder the brunt of our new ARR target for the company and the organization by like quite a big margin. Our account management team and the channel management teams sort of round out the rest. And you know, you're talking about from an ARR perspective or from like a new business sales executive perspective or
yeah, from a new bookings perspective.
New bookings, yeah.
Plus whatever you or the team is comped on.
Yeah, so we're all comped on ARR. Yeah, it's you know, it's a race, it's a challenge. There's you know, a lot of pressure to deliver, and I'm not going to get into specifics on what the numbers are, but it's a good chunk. We'll just leave it at that.
Great. Just sort of diving in on that. What is it? What are you guys going to do to help hit this giant R goal?
Yeah, you know, it's a challenge for sure. I think, you know, we've taken a lot of good steps around sales process, around our tech stack, the hiring to help us get there, and working with other parts of the organization and product marketing and, you know, product teams and customer success teams. I think, you know, we got a unique challenge in our addressable market, which is HR and communications. It's a big market, and it's also quite seasonal. So what we need to do is make sure that we're aligning our value prop, driving that to the right person in the right department with the right message at, you know, really at the right time. So we've on the new business side, in many cases, we've got a 2-to-1 pairing for our most senior reps from an SDR to a sales executive standpoint, and everybody else has a 1-to-1. It's a bit of a rich investment, but one that we found is helps us get there. Goals are pretty simple. I mean, you know, from a new business sales standpoint, the goal is to complete 30 net new meetings per month and complete 10 follow-up meetings. Those follow-up meetings will lead to, you know, high quality pipeline. And, you know, if you just focus on those two, everything will, has a way of, you know, taking care of itself. From an SDR perspective, we goal them on 4 or 5 metrics. They have to make sure that the meetings that they set up, they've got to have their counterpart complete 30 net new meetings on average.
Complete, not just schedule.
Not just schedule, complete. Yeah. It's like
big difference there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think our market's challenging. I'm sure everybody struggles with this, but just because you book a meeting doesn't mean that they actually show up. So we want to comp on accomplishment. So yeah, the idea is simple. You know, they feed their reps 30 completed meetings per month. That should generate about 7 opportunities, and we've got a deal advancement sort of criteria so that things are actually progressing through the funnel in a way that you'd expect it to if it's qualified and forecasted as pipeline, and then we do measure on the number of closed deals. Even though it's mostly in the control of the quota bearing rep, we do comp our SDRs on quality. But
is that a large percentage of their comp?
It's a decent amount. It's not the biggest. I think, you know, you've got kind of input driven measures, and then you've got output driven measures. So the inputs obviously being the phone calls and you know, the meetings will lead to deals deals being forecasted, moved through the pipe, and then ultimately closed.
Good question. So there's one thing you mentioned before is it's seasonal. How do you account for that when you got monthly goals? Do you look at quarterly or do they change or?
So the beauty about it is, you know, this is an oversimplification, but 6 months out of the year, you know, it's selling season for a handful of our addressable market. And it's kind of when things go dark on the other half. And then for 6 months out of the year, it's exactly the opposite, right? So, you know, in open enrollment, for example, everybody, when you go through open enrollment and you select your benefits for the year, that usually happens around Halloween, you know, October or so. And depending upon how big the company is, they're buying in either Q1, Q2, or Q3. But they almost don't do anything in Q4. But that's the exact same time that we're talking to people in, you know, talent management and compensation, talking about like the year-end performance review and how you set up goals for the year. And, you know, most comp changes come through in April. So we do have a consistent sort of demand for meetings throughout the year, but you want to make sure that you're calling, you know, the people that are going to buy in the next quarter more so than the people that just aren't going to buy because they don't have a need for it at that time.
Do your quotas change? Do they go up and down?
No, they're consistent throughout the year.
Yeah, actually, so is the appointment setting results pretty steady, but the revenue is much more cyclical? Or are the appointments, which part is more, I mean, the revenue's got to be really seasonal for you, but what about the appointment setting part?
Yeah, you know, when we first started the business, we were kind of a one-trick pony where, you know, we had our target market, and it was, you know, mid-market companies that had benefits people. And, you know, as a result, like something like 90-100% of our revenue was done in like one quarter of the year. So we were waiting for our kind of open Super Bowl. And we've actually smoothed that out quite a bit with just, you know, the strides that we're making into the market and sort of product market fit in other departments. So we haven't completely figured it out just yet, but it's a lot more flat these days. But yeah, from a revenue standpoint, I think, you know, you'll see some waiting towards the back half of the year than you would in the front half. But you know, the meetings is we see a pretty consistent demand throughout the year.
So one thing it's a question I've heard a lot from, you know, people that are in the space or people that are thinking of starting, you know, an outbound program. Hey, it's the middle of the summer or it's not our buying season. Should I still start an outbound program now? And, you know, I'm a big fan of, you got a quota this year, don't you? Do you want to hit it? You probably, you know, the best time to start building an SDR team was 3 years ago. The second best time is now.
Yeah.
I'm obviously a little biased. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, if there are people out there that could or should benefit from your product or would benefit from knowing that you're out there, look, like, people are making decisions right now. We've been at this for, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, and there are still people in our core market that have never even heard of us before. And the only way that we're going to get to them is we're going to, you know, usually start out with a cold call or an email and get, you know, get on their radar. So that's one thing about trying to time a market too, is what we continually learn is every time we think we learn what's going to work in the market, like, you know, we go back and we look back and say, holy smokes, like, we always thought Q3 was the time to go and hit our target market because that's when they bought. What we found over the years is it continues to get earlier and earlier and earlier. So we're going after, you know, the large, you know, above 50,000 person orgs because they start making decisions in January, February, and March. So when you call, you know, you don't think it's the buying season. It's, you know, people are out there making decisions right now. So that's sort of my thought on that.
Cool. Following up on your previous comment around the number of net new meetings, you said 30 net new meetings and then 10 follow-up meetings. So the completed So 30 net new, that's the that they've booked and that a prospect showed up to for your account manager, right?
Yep.
And then what are the follow-up meetings? Is that, yeah, can you explain a little bit more there?
Those, yeah. And how do you maintain the quality of, it's one thing to get a meeting to happen. Another is it, or is it like a worthwhile meeting?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of qualification that happens on both ends. You know, are we a fit for them? And, you know, do we think they're a good fit for us? So the concept behind the follow-up meeting is that, you know, once, you know, 9 times out of 10, what we do on an initial demo, people are kind of, you know, thumbs up. They're like, wow, this is great. I could really, really use this, and, you know, so on and so forth. And then we have the sales exec reach out, you know, after the meeting, and you're like, hey, you know, it was a great meeting, you know, and they come back and say, yeah, but we're not going to buy. So the follow-up meetings are sort of a leading indicator into pipeline that's about to be developed. And so the idea being, you know, you get the initial meeting and it goes well and you qualify it. After you have that second meeting, you should really know whether or not this prospect is a buyer. And, you know, it's hard to do what we do in a half hour or an hour meeting, right? You've got to qualify them, you've got to establish value, you've got to learn about their challenges, their business problems, their needs. And, you know, you try to do that in a half hour, that's tough. So that's the reason for the follow-on meetings.
Cool. Hey, troubleshoot something for me. Let's pretend I'm an SDR. I've been with you for a few months. I'm booking my 30 net new meetings every single month. But my guys, my sales engineer, account exec, they're not getting any follow-up meetings. What advice would you offer me? What might I be doing wrong?
Or where do you look first to try to understand?
Yeah, you know, it's I've heard of that happening once or twice. It's common, and I think. You know, the biggest advice I'd probably sit down in the SDR and have him, you know, focus on things that he can control. If it's, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if it's a sales executive that's not listening or not following sales process or just kind of throwing up on themselves, like, that SDR can't control that, right? They can only control, you know, who they're going to call next and, you know, partner with that as that sales executive to kind of qualify that person ahead of time. So I'm a big believer that, you know, when you're in sales, you're never done learning, and there's always something more that you can do. So, you know, I'm a big believer that the SDR's job starts once you get that yes from the prospect that they're willing to take a meeting. That's where the kind of art of sales starts, is around discovery, right? So we look at things like, you know, I would look at the SDR's talk time, and are they just booking meetings to book meetings and there's no real kind of business problem or need, and, you know, the prospect's just bored and taking a meeting for taking a meeting's sake? Or is it that, you know, the SDR is actually doing a really good job qualifying out, you know, yes, they have a problem, it's worth solving, it's worth investing in, when ideally they'd like to have something like this in place, who they're looking at from a competitive standpoint, right? If they're doing that, like, chances are, you know, there's a problem on the sales executive side, and we're quick to spot that and make changes where appropriate.
How big is the team? Nice.
So we've got so it's matrix across sales and account management, and then we have SDRs for both. So we've got, I want to say, 15 SDRs and 11 new business sales executives. Mm-hmm. And then we've got, I want to say, 6 or 7 account managers and 3 or 4 SDRs that are of the account management flavor. So I'm not a math guy. What is that? 50? Yeah. Yeah, close to 30, over 30 or so people.
Well, actually, so then for the account, the SDRs were tied to the account managers. Are they, is there a main area going out to surface new revenue, like extra divisions, or are they,
yep,
like, you know, so I it makes sense. I haven't, that's not as common. How are you guys using SDRs for to help out the account management growth?
Yeah, so we call them account specialists, and their goal is to help
marketing.
Yeah. Their goal is to really help the account manager. So the account manager's goal is to manage the net growth and retention of customers. And so it's very much a new business sales role. And so we land account A, and you know the new business sales executive holds on to that account for a year, right? So they've got a year to do all their upselling. And then we peel them off and introduce them to a more stable resource that is going to manage the relationship from there. So the account specialist, at the end of the day, it's the same job. It's just one is fishing in a pond of current customers and going in down the hall into different divisions and different applications of our solution. And you know, one is just calling up prospects.
Do the goals, like the 30 appointments, 10 follow-ups change, or are they the same for the...
They're pretty similar. I think they're a little south of that, but they're aggressive and they're fairly similar.
Cool. One of the things we sort of talked about pre-call, and it was in the sort of show notes, was you sort of stumbled across, or you were some of your reps maybe struggled with happy years. Can you tell me about, you know, what happened there and what you guys did to overcome that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's across the board from an SDR to, you know, the quota bearing guys, gals, you know, a lot of times. So we've invested in some technology to kind of measure, the substance of conversations that we're having, both on the SDR front as well as on the new business sales executive side. So a lot of times we'll have people coming out of demos going, I nailed it. They were talking about pricing. They want a proposal. And, you know, we go back in the pipeline review and just have it this morning. It's okay. You know, that's great. So what's the problem on their end? And they kind of look at you like, wait, what do you mean? Like, well, if they don't have a business problem, like they're not going to buy. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, that's a tire kicker. So that's the happy years front. I think on the SDR side, that's around, you know, you kind of using the enthusiasm of, or the euphoric feeling that you get when you knock down that demo, that meeting that you book with that prospect that you've called 80 times, they've never picked up, and you know, you're just happy to get the meeting and you kind of hang up. Right. So, you know, it's grounded in taking an objective look at, you know, sales process and making sure that you're doing the things that you need to do to remove emotion out of the equation, which is tough because sales is a very emotional sort of roller coaster type of profession. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sounds almost like you have a bit of a checklist, or these are the criteria for each step.
Yeah, you could say that. We've got a lot of checklists. we've got a lot of sales process because in the past we didn't have a ton of it. It was the wild, wild west, you know, in the Series A and even B. It was just, you know, throwing up stuff up against the wall and hopefully it sticks. And as we've grown and evolved, you know, we've had this problem of opportunities getting converted into our pipeline, sticking around for, you know, 6 to 12 months before ultimately we kill them. And that's no good. That gives a false indication to sales management and the board of, you know, results that probably aren't coming. So we've had to really focus in on slowing down to really speed up. When you slow down and you do it the right way, you see deals really accelerate through the pipeline and close. And that starts with the SDR, right? And you know, again, to my comment around, you know, your job really begins as soon as you get that person interested in taking a meeting. Okay. So where do you take it from there? We look at, you know, talk times for SDRs and the ones that actually are able to keep people talking and asking them questions and layering in stories. Those are usually the best ones. And those are the ones that, you know, do well in a quota bearing role. Right. It's not just a meeting setter type of profession. You know, it's, you think of yourself as a salesperson and not a meeting sort of booker. And that was a mentality really, really goes a long way for the ones that are serious about the profession.
Yeah. You're the setup guy for your account exec or your account engineer or sales engineer or whatever it is.
Yeah. It all starts with that interaction. If you've got a good interaction with that, you know, that you're the beginning point, you're the tip of the spear to the market, and their impression of GuideSpark is going to be formed by you. And it's an important one to get right.
Mm-hmm. John, I know you've shared a lot of your handbook for the SDRs at GuideSpark, and I know it sort of details a lot of that process there. You know, can you maybe share a couple of pieces that, you know, for the SDRs that are out there listening that maybe have happy years, what are some of the things that you'd advise them to maybe slow down and think about or address on the call before they just sort of book that meeting and add another number to their dashboard in Salesforce?
Yeah, you know, I think there's an old saying in sales, and it's true. It's, you know, you've got to be protective of your time. And, you know, while we have relatively high meeting quotas, it's all about making sure that, you know, our job as sales professionals is to understand, relatively speaking, if the person that we're talking to is a good fit for what we do. And if it's not a good fit, that's okay. Like, chances are it's not going to be a fit anyways, but you want to get that answer ahead of time. Don't just book meetings to book meetings, because then you get, you know, you know, sales executive going in and doing a bunch of meetings with people that are never going to buy it to begin with. And all of a sudden they get through their, you know, a month worth of meetings and they've got no pipeline or nothing to show for it. Like, those hour long sessions add up. That's 30 hours that, you know, that sales exec could have used to, you know, work a deal or you know, do some cold calling themselves. So
good reminder for people not to base comp, you know, primarily on just number of meetings either scheduled or that happened. There's too much possibility for questionable quality.
Yeah, comp definitely drives behavior, which is, you know, there's a quality sort of component to that too. And, you know, if ultimately if somebody's got a business problem or a pain and, you know, you've got a solution for it, you're going to want to know that, right? And but it's up to you to set meetings with those folks. And if you're going to just set meetings to set meetings with tire kickers, you know, it's going to come out the other end. It's going to be pretty transparent in the process, and you know, you're not going to make any money that quarter, right?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned if it's, you know, for the rep, if it's not a good fit, how do you guys define, like, do you have some pre-qualification criteria for your SDRs and who they can go after?
Yeah, so we go after, so HR specifically, and what we're trying to do with ideally, we're going to get a meeting with somebody that likely has a problem that we solve. And so what we want to do is we want to arm the SDR to set a kind of, you know, here it, you know, Acme widgets. We have this widget that's going to help you do this feature, like featured up, and turn around on them and really engage in a dialogue. So I guess, let's just say, like, we've got personas and we've got problems and goals that and customer stories and questions that they can ask to help get that dialogue going. And, you know, it might start out with, you know, if I'm calling into a VP of compensation, I'd say, Hey, Colin, John Parisi with GuideSpark. Hey, given that most managers are unfamiliar with how to make compensation decisions that are consistent with your compensation philosophy, and as a result, top performers tend to leave, wanted to know if that's an issue that you might be, you know, that you might be experiencing, and if so, if there was a way that I could show you how we could fix that, would that be worth a half hour of your time?
I'm ready to say yes.
You're leading in with the problem that you know that person's going to have, and you don't have to, that's the beauty with the model is like, you don't have to do any account research ahead of time. That person on the other end, if they have that title, they're going to have that problem. It doesn't matter what company they work for, how big the company is, where they're located.
It's like when you do your research on the industry segment and it reduces what you have to do per company, person.
Yeah.
But I think this is a great point to mention that you have generously offered to share what you have. You have a couple of conversation aids. These are sort of like one sheet summaries. In fact, I'm just going to take a risk here and see if I can share my screen. If it doesn't work, let's go right back. But so we'll have to, I guess we'll post a link along with the interview, but it's a little bit mangled here, but this is a one page for a cheat sheet for the compensation buyer. So for SDRs, and then there's another page around like challenge questions and like a little mini customer stories. So these are great, but we can share these with readers/listeners. We'll just have to put them up someplace. So anyway,
yeah, I'll add them into the show notes after this call. So if you're on the site and you're looking for these links, just have a look down below, and they'll be in the show notes.
There you go.
Perfect. Yeah, I love the way you guys organize those conversation starters. And one of the things that, John, you were telling me about, you know, before we started recording was about your 3x3 and how you, because the pitch example you gave us, that was to, you know, a certain level. It the way you explained it, it would change if you had reached the CEO or if you'd reached a VP director, et cetera. Can you maybe explain a little bit more about how you guys coach your team on that?
Yeah, for sure. So the 3x3 model is something I learned early on in my sales career, and just one of those things. I don't know where it came from, but it was taught to me, and I applied it, and what did you know? It actually worked. And so if you think about in an organization, you've got kind of lower level people, mid level people, and senior level. So if you think about a triangle, at the top you've got a VP, in the middle you've got your director and your manager. And at the bottom, you've got an analyst, right? And so the 3x3 model is kind of walking up and down that chain of command to make sure that your value prop resonates against the goals, problems, and needs of each one of those folks in the chain of command. So, for example, if I were to, sell a call dialer type of software, to heads of sales, I wouldn't call a head of sales and say, hey, Mr. Head of Sales, this is John Parisi with Acme Dialer Company. Here at Acme Dialer Company, we have this dialer technology that helps your SDRs have more conversations in a day, and it has a really cool domino. And right, the VP of Sales is going to say, I don't care, like, click. But if I let in with, hey, Mr. VP of Sales, I understand as the head of sales for a venture-backed startup company that, your sales targets are quite aggressive, and it's a challenge to hit or beat those each and every year, especially at your stage. And if there was a way that I could show you how a small investment could increase your team's productivity to get more revenue in the door quicker, is that worth a half hour of your time? Right. And so, that VP of sales might say yes, because his goal is to obviously hit or beat his number. His problem is, there are a lot of forces going against him in that, and he needs ways to kind of do that. So he's going to task his VP to go out and, find a way for him to hit his number. And all of a sudden the VP gets tasked with, okay, I've got to go find a sales recruiter, or I've got to go find a piece of technology that helps me, helps me get to my VP sales number. And then that VP may task somebody in sales ops to say, go find technology that's going to help us move the needle on the sales front, right? And so that previous pitch might work with that sales operations person, but it's not going to work with VP. So the goals, problems, and needs of each level, or the goals and problems will drive, or the needs of the level above will drive the goals, problems, and needs of the level below. So you can vary your pitch depending upon who you're talking to in the value chain.
Yep. So you mentioned, so for example, that's an opener. Sounds like if you found someone on the phone, but for the meetings that your SDRs are setting up, and let's take maybe the initial ones at 30 a month goal, how many do you feel get set up primarily through, say, email versus the phone? Do you have a mix? Is it you, do you guys focus on one or the other, 50-50? Is it dependent on the SDR? Like, how do you see those and what's more effective? Or is it an X factor also with social? Or?
Yeah, so we don't do a ton of social, right or wrong. We just don't. But I could actually pull that up. So we actually track that, and we've tracked that for quite some time. You know, the source of the meeting, was it a phone call or an email? I think we're at like the, you know, 70-30 phone call to email ratio.
So 70% set up through a phone call. Yeah. 30 through email. And you know, is it where they're generally calling them and they just catch them at the right time? Or yeah. Do they often schedule it through email? Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we use email as a way to warm up our call.
Yep.
Right. And so a typical call cadence, there's a lot of schools of thought around, you know, what's the magic number to get in front of somebody? Is it, you know, 7 touches, 3 voicemails, and 4 emails? And I don't think anybody's going to ever figure that out, any degree of reliability, because as soon as somebody figures out the formula, the buyers respond and the formula changes.
Exactly. So, yeah, because there is no single, you know, answer.
Yeah, the best time of the week to call is Thursday. Well, guess what? Everyone's calling it Thursday.
Yeah.
People aren't going to pick up. They're going to pick up Monday morning. So,
Actually, I like to say people ask, I get these questions like, well, should I email, call, email? Or should I email, call, email, email? Because I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Done is better than perfect. Pick up the phone. You know, we try to get in front of people and catch them live. There's no real rhyme or reason. I mean, if you think about how often you're at your desk, are you going to be at your desk?
I wish I had a desk.
More or less, depending upon what, right? It's a random sort of thing. So just persistence. Like we might call somebody 80 times before we actually get a live connect.
Yeah. You know? You guys use a main calling tool for that?
We do. Yeah. We use Inside Sales, InsideSales.com's power dialer.
Yeah. Pretty common.
And, long time.
Where all my old Salesforce friends are now these days.
Yeah.
Great. Some are happy and some aren't.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you measure, what other kinds of measurements do you do around calling? So you mentioned talk time was one. One thing you care about. I mean, obviously you can measure a bunch of things, but what do you care about around calling, dials, this, that, the other?
Yeah, you know, similar to measuring, I think a common mistake for measuring meetings is like they'll measure and comp on booked meetings.
Yeah,
it's almost like measuring and comping off of phone calls, right? We've actually found, surprise, towards the end of the quarter, there are SDRs that haven't hit their call number, and what they'll do is they'll call that number, you know, 100 times and hang up, which is kind of juice, right?
Yeah, or on Sundays.
So yeah, call times. In we have a dashboard kind of called you know, fake dials. So the idea is not to be on that. you know, measure talk time, not formally, but you know, informally, just to get a sense for, you know, who are the ones having the most substantive type of conversations. Across my team, I measure phone calls. I measure meetings that the sales executive books themselves. Because at the end of the day, if your SDR is on vacation for 2 weeks or they're having a difficult month, it's still up to you to make sure that you're doing the amount of activity that's going to get you set up for success. So it's almost like, you know, if you over-rely on your SDR, it's very easy as a sales rep to say, my SDR didn't get me the meetings, that's why I'm not successful.
Yeah, no. I think it's going to fly.
That's not going to fly. Like, okay, well, great. I'll just go to my VP of sales and say the SDR had a bad month and, you know, reduce the quota. not how it works, right? So so I measure them on really the amount of meetings that they're doing, the pipeline that they're creating, whether or not they're following sales process. So in pipeline reviews, we use another tool called Gong, where it's a bit of a BS filter, but it's a great coaching tool. Help us go through deals and actually what's happening on the call.
It's a Gong.io or Gong.ai. I've seen that name someplace.
Yeah, Gong.io.
Gong.io, yep.
Yeah.
IO is getting so outdated now. Or something new.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, hey, other facts. So just, was it Saster? We were at Saster recently. And one of the panels I led was called How to Build Your First Outbound Team, you know, how to get it right the first time. And it was packed. But one of the I would say it's surprising, there was three panel leaders and they built multiple teams for the most part. But one thing they agreed on was, and they were all practitioners of predictable revenue too. One had been a client at one of the companies, another had worked at one point. I mean, they'd done multiple teams, so some of that. But they said that, you know, between email, the phone, and social, the phone was number one. They're the most important tool. And, you know, I know email gets all the attention, and I'm actually probably a big contributor to that. And I don't know if it's because now there's enough email that phone differentiates, or phone just, you know, connects to people. Like when you can hear someone's voice, if you can get them, it's, you know, email's one-dimensional. His phone is two-dimensional.
Yeah.
Something about it. But yeah, everyone agreed. And we've seen this too. When people do phone plus email, it can, you know, double results over just email. So that was interesting to see that.
Yeah, phone is there's no substitute for having a live conversation, right? And I'd say you're probably using email as a mechanism to actually have that conversation. So it's a tool to help you have that. No sale is ever done through just email exchange.
Yeah, no, it's email is a way to get to the phone.
Yeah, for sure.
So I know it's still common. Lots of people are afraid of, we have generations growing up on email with no phone. So there's still a lot of phone fear, the younger ones. Speaking of which, question, average age of a lot of your SDRs, and related to that, how do you manage, how impatient are they or not, morale or not, what point, if they're there before, you'd said actually, I think in a prep, that they usually 12 or 13 months is a typical tenure, you know, what point do you see people start to struggle motivation wise, and then what do you do about it? Super common question with, I don't know if we're still on millennials or if it's the next Gen Z group yet.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough one. And I think that's, I'll share a personal story in a little bit, but, you know, we've had some issues with that, not only kind of that sort of runway and you know, it's a tough gig, right? How do you do it for 2 years and not get a little frustrated or monotonous, right? I get it.
If you're any good at it, it does. That's the paradox. The people that you want to hire are the ones who are going to get bored within.
Yeah, you know, there are opportunities, especially here in the Bay Area, that's almost like perfect optionality, right? And I think why people stick around here is I think there's a certain level of experience around the table that is helping guide, you know, young, relatively inexperienced, but very impressive talent through their career. And, you know, the goal of our SDR program is to ultimately bring that young and raw, hungry talent through the pipeline. So we skew relatively younger, early stage career, their entry level, or they've had 1 to 2 years experience. But the idea is, you know, you bring it through the pipeline, you help us support our outbound efforts, they grow their sales career in return. And once they're in a position to get promoted, it's like, you know, everything they've done up until that point sort of just becomes table stakes. And it's like when I got my Series 7 back in the day, you know, I studied for what seemed like months and months and months. And, and, you know, really, really kind of put a lot of effort into it. And once I got it, I remember my branch manager saying, well, that's great, kid. But all it really means is that you're minimally competent in this investment advice. I remember hearing that saying like, well, thanks a lot, man. But, you know, it's really similar from SDR to AE. And I speak to a lot of our former SDRs who are currently AEs today, both here and elsewhere. And they always come back to like, you know, when they felt like they couldn't make a single dial, right? They felt like they reached the pinnacle of their development and, you know, in the SDR role, you know, there's a feeling of kind of, hey, I've plateaued, I've done this. And you always say, hey, be patient. There's always more that you can learn. And, you know, they might not believe you at the time, but they usually come back and say, you know what? Yeah, you were right. And that's a reason why I love sales. And so I think it's important as sales leaders, sales development, or whoever, you know, has a system, you know, that's really centered around, you know, experienced sales reps and sales management, that, you know, if you feel like you mastered cold calling, great, you know, learn how to run a demo. If you get good at demos, try working with your SE or AE to get deals that are kind of stuck in the pipeline unstuck, right? Use some creative ways of account research, drop something on your prospect that talks about a quote that their CEO just mentioned in a recent in investor day transcript, or work on your leadership skills, right? You can mentor somebody else. You might want to gain exposure to other parts of the organization, lead a cross-functional team with marketing to help work on a project, go help us hire some interns, right? I think, you know, that's been a struggle for us because it's a transition that we haven't figured out quite yet, but you know, I was in that same position too, right? You know, if I were thinking about advice to give myself back in the day, would be to, you know, be patient. I was one of those hotshot SDRs that thought, you know, I had it all figured out, and I jumped at the first opportunity to have a quota bearing role, and you know, I failed miserably. I wasn't ready, and I was put on a few performance plans, and that was kind of a tough lesson to learn. And looking back, I definitely should have been fired, but one thing I should have been fired twice, but I wasn't. But one thing I learned from a mentor of mine was like, just focus on what you can control. I said, you know, and if I'm going to fail, then I'm going to outwork everybody in the process. And you know, people noticed that grind factor, and somebody must've saw it and believed in me. And, you know, I'm glad that I did, but it's hard to give that perspective to somebody that's 22 and is worried about
or impossible.
Yeah, they're worried about, you know, scraping together enough couple nickels for the weekend for some beers, right? And you know, they're looking at that quota bearing role, and you know, if you know, you've got to have a development program that is designed to help keep them engaged and further their you know, career in sales. And that's the thing. I've been at this for 15 years and I'm still learning every single day. And that's the beauty about the profession.
Yeah. Actually, from Impossible Book, one of the points we make is, you know, the company's not your mommy and daddy. It's not their job to make it interesting. Like it's 50, maybe half their job and half your job to find out what interests you and to figure it out.
Yeah.
So, usually not, again, a simple answer, but.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like you guys, you like GuideSpark and John, you and your team, you invest a lot in helping these SDRs, you know, like you said, recruiting the raw talent and really shaping them into the, you know, the sales leaders of, you know, that are going to rise up at GuideSpark. I got one last question. Just, you know, you guys do all this, you it seems like you invest so much in your team. Have you ever, you know, what's something you maybe screwed up in the early days at GuideSpark?
How much time you got? yeah, early days, we screwed a lot of things up. I think looking back, I'd have to say hiring. You know, we were at a point where we grew from 2 SDRs to 4 to 10 to 15. I think at our peak, we had 41 SDRs.
Yep.
Well, and You know, we took some flyers on some people that, you know, we probably shouldn't have. We liked them as people, but at the end of the day, they just weren't cut out for sales. And, you know, the other day we just had a colleague of mine ask, hey, you know, would you like to spend 20 minutes with this candidate? I'm kind of lukewarm on him, but, you know, he doesn't really have the energy or the enthusiasm. He sent me kind of a really kind of lazy follow-up after our conversation. But, you know, he was pretty sharp. He was thoughtful and experienced. And I said to him, hey, man, like, if you don't love his energy, enthusiasm, then cut it, right? He's not a fit. Unless he's somebody that we feel really strongly that can succeed, is wired the right way, or could be the next, you know, name a top performing SDR on our team. Like, that's kind of like the test. If we feel like this person could grow into somebody that's kind of at the top of their game, then pass. And we didn't do that in the beginning. We still made some killer hires, and it was probably more luck than anything else. And similarly, we had some folks that made it through the process that probably shouldn't have made it through. And then the double whammy was we held on to them a bit longer than we probably should have. And that's something that we're still trying to figure out, but I think we're getting better at.
Awesome. John, I think everybody on this call is probably, or on this episode here, has probably made that mistake of hanging on to people too long. And I think on that note, we've probably hung on to this episode for the right amount of time. So why don't we use that terrible segue to call it here? John, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I know I'm going to hit you up after this for that handbook and see what we can share, what we can't share with the audience. But really, man, thank you so much for coming on.
Cool. Thank you, guys. This was fun. Let's do it again.
Thanks, John.
Definitely.